Hello, listeners. Welcome to another episode of The Circuit. I am Ben Beharin.
Greetings, listeners. I'm Jay Goldberg.
Well, we are pleased to kick today's episode off with a guest, the host and founder, I believe, right, of China Talk, Jordan Schneider. Thanks for joining us, Jordan. Why don't you give us a little background on yourself for anybody who doesn't know who you are?
Sure. Jordan, I run China Talk. It's a podcast and newsletter about U.S.-China technology that I've been running for the past 8 years. And I'm a big, my first time, long time with The Circuit. It's such a treat. You guys have taught me so much. Thank you for your service.
Well, happy to. And I meant to call out that last episode was our 100th episode, and I forgot. And people were like, hey, it was 100. I just didn't look at the naming scheme, or I would have like said, Jay, look, we did 100, but hey, we did 100. Now we're on 101. So there you go. So keeping it real on the moments, I guess, the episodic moments. All right. So Jordan, we are interested. There's obviously new news in China restrictions and the ongoing drama of China semiconductor and technology restrictions by the U.S. This came out a couple of days ago. Just curious on kind of your overall take on kind of the new administration's, I guess.
The old administration's.
Old administration's, new rules. There you go.
Sure. Old administration's new rules. So, you know, to catch everyone up, October 2022, we have the first big shot across the bow from the Biden administration controlling a number of semiconductor manufacturing equipment, ostensibly targeted towards stopping sort of leading edge, like 14 nanometer or less production, as well as the import of various AI chips themselves. They sort of screwed up the parameters in October 2022. It took them a year to actually draw the line correctly. So NVIDIA like didn't see any hit to their China revenue until the revision of October 2023. And then it almost took 2 years for them to figure out how to do the semiconductor manufacturing equipment correctly. So we just saw a steady expansion of which machines were going to be covered, how they were going to enforce it, who the buyers were and weren't allowed to be, and to what extent like you could get away with like using shell companies. So like the line that they were able to really hold was this sort of EUV lithography line with ASML, but ASML was still able to sell a ton of DUV into China, as all your listeners know. And there were a lot of other companies whose China revenue since October 2022, when these semicap equipment controls were supposed to be in place, has actually gone up. So what we saw over the past, I guess, like 6 weeks at the very tail end of the Biden administration was a number of different efforts that they have used to ramp up the controls that they think are necessary in order for, you know, America and all of its friends and liberal allies to win, the semiconductor and AI race of the 21st century. So we had let's split it up into sort of, so we have three parts. We have the semiconductor manufacturing equipment, we have the controls of the chips themselves, and then we have this sort of like new AI diffusion rule, and it's probably best for us to go one by one through all of them. Mm. Where you want to start?
Okay.
All right. Let's go through the let's go through the high level. What are those three? What are the rules on each of those?
Okay, so manufacturing equipment, it has gotten tighter on a lot of dimensions. There have been new there have been like. There's been a particular focus in the December 2024 rule on high bandwidth memory. So both from the perspective of China being able to import as well as being able to manufacture a lot of the sort of major players in the Chinese domestic memory space have been hit with the no-go list. On the chips themselves, there was a big So, you know, over the course of 2023, it turned out that a lot of what Huawei's AI chip manufacturing was actually just done at TSMC, which is like kind of hysterical and pathetic on the part of both TSMC and the U.S. government for not picking it up before Tech Insights did. But in response to that, there's been another round of sort of regulatory requirements for foundries, where if chips are above a certain like bit transistor density, if the chips have enough transistors on them, they have to go through an extra screening process to ensure that they're not a Huawei shell company. And then lastly, we have this AI diffusion rule, which is the most kind of like AGI-pilled and, you know, forward-thinking of all of them, basically writing the rules of the road such that there are, aside from 20 very close U.S. allies, so there's now three buckets of countries. There's like America's 20 closest friends. There's the entire world, and then there's like the, you know, 20 or 30 so countries, the North Koreas and Russias and Chinas of the world, where if you are not in one of the 20 closest friends, then you have to go through a licensing process for the U.S. government to approve your ability to import AI chips and build out sort of data center, build out like large scale data centers. And over the long term, there are some requirements for different countries where different companies where like a where at least 50%, I believe, of all their future data center capacity has to be in the U.S. before they start building, giant data centers in Dubai and Kazakhstan and God knows wherever else.
So that's a lot. That's a lot. So they hit, tightened up the wafer fabrication equipment rules.
Correct.
To make it harder, especially for China to advance in memory. They further limited access to TSMC and then made it, put a tiering list in place for countries that will have variable degrees of access to getting chips out of TSMC or from the companies themselves.
Correct.
Okay. And what about this AI diffusion stuff?
Yeah, so the AI diffusion stuff, that is like where companies are allowed to build data centers. Basically, there was this concern and frustration that Malaysia all of a sudden was building like more compute than Meta has currently. And the assumption was that that was basically Chinese companies using sort of third party, tier one cloud providers in order to get access to the chips that they, for whatever reason, didn't want to use on AWS servers and weren't allowed or weren't able to smuggle into China themselves. So what this is doing is basically creating giving the U.S. government visibility into where those where that future compute capacity is being built out, and giving some sort of like a veto for the U.S. government where they want more of that to be built in the U.S. and in friendly countries, not in third parties and with, you know, third-party clouds that they might not trust to run, to not run sort of like PLA training runs or what have you.
Right, and it's more than just chips too. They've limited spreading models. Model weights are now tightly controlled as well. Is that right?
Yeah, so that one's a little more nuanced because the model, there are a number of like things that cut against that. Basically, the model weight controls are not for, it's like GPT-6, GPT-7, like the flop counts are higher than anything that's ever been made before. And there's another sort of like sub clause where whatever the largest open source model that is like extant in the world, like that is the threshold upon which you can export the model weights of your closed source model. But yeah, there's another provision in there that like you cannot have the weights of a closed source model above a certain size without kind of like telling the government first or getting some approval to have it leave the US or friendly countries. Which is weird because you can just hack those, but like, whatever, they're trying.
I'll come back to the hacking in a second. Okay. So that's a lot of ground. What do you think motivated doing this at like the 11th hour of the Biden administration?
I mean, like, they have been really slow for a lot of this stuff. You know, a lot of the loopholes, which were clearly not necessarily the intent of the regulations, are the sorts of things that, like, I would talk about on China Talk 2 days after. And it would take the Department of Commerce a year to issue a correction for. So they've been on this like annual cadence, which I think is really frustrating from an outside observer's perspective, because, like, you know, the Chinese firms that are trying to get around them are not sort of sitting on their heels, like, you know, going to try to make it easy for these folks. It just seems like these are very complicated pieces of regulations that have been on the you know, in the hopper for a long time now, and this was clearly, you know, the administration leaving on Monday was clearly a forcing function for them to try to get it out the door. And what's also interesting, Jay, is like it seems like a lot of these rules they tried to frame in the hopes that the Trump administration would pick up and run with it. Like the AI diffusion one, for instance, like that is very much like an America first kind of energy to it. It's like, you better build your God, you know, keep the chips at home, like build the data center capacity in the US before we ship it off to any of these other countries that like don't really care about you know, American greatness or whatever.
Well, and plus like this could just get, I mean, this is what I wrestled with was, I mean, Trump could just say no, or he could make them worse, or he could do his own things. So it's like, you do this, but there's no real chance it sticks. So sure, you're like, on my way out, here's my like guiding hurrah, but like it's not set in stone, right? The new administration can make changes as necessary.
Totally. And I think it's very, like, I would be shocked if the export control regime 6 months from now or a year from now is exactly the same. But what is interesting is two things. I think first, like, Trump has said very explicitly on multiple occasions, like, we're in an AI race with China and we have to win it. So, you know, this is the main policy lever that the U.S. government has in order to advance its, you know, it's there's sort of like you break stuff down into like protect and promote. Right. On the protect side, the sort of things to kick the Chinese firms down the ladder, it's basically these hardware export controls, right? And on the promote side, you know, there's all this stuff with like Elon wanting to be able to like, you know, pour diesel down the burn as much diesel as he wants to power his data centers and whatever. And I'm sure we'll see a lot of that in terms of like loosening the environmental regulations around domestic data centers. But when it comes to specifically what he's going to do with respect to China and the AI diffusion policy, I mean, it is a really open question. Like he just said he had like a really nice call with Xi, but I was excited to see that he did not say, and we like talked about how we're going to give them the chips again. So I feel like there is enough of a consensus in his orbit and of the people that he's appointed who deal with China policy and deal with technology policy that these are, you know, that these are important regulations. Like Marco Rubio, he's been writing letters for years saying that the Commerce Department has not been aggressive enough in its efforts to stop Huawei from getting access to Western technology. Of course. So look, 70-30, that we'll see roughly the same, if not tighter, 2 years from now. But like, yeah, I mean, Overton window's wide open. Like Trump could, you know, declare peace in our times tomorrow. Who the hell knows?
Or start charging them. I don't know. He wants to make money from other
nations.
Make
a deal. Yeah,
to pay totally. For our debt. Right. Art of the deal. So from a lot of the folks that you've had on your podcast to talk about this, is there a consensus? Like, is this going to work? Do they admit like struggling loopholes or glaring gaps in what's being, you know, thrown out here?
Well, I mean, I'd appreciate Jay's take on this, but my sort of baseline is the counterfactual that if none of this had been in place, like Huawei is basically as good design chops as any company in the world, and SMIC was on the trajectory to actually compete with you know, Definitely Intel, if not even potentially TSMC. So even though this stuff isn't perfect, like my take is that it has had a real impact on Chinese domestic capacity. But Jay, what's your counterfactual if none of this would have happened?
Well, I was listening to your two emergency episodes this week, and I started at one point keeping a mental list of ways that I would get around these rules if I were a Chinese entrepreneur. And I got to give myself some credit because I think I came up with some really creative ways. And I was, my original instinct was like, I wanted to call in. Like if there were a radio talk show, I would have called in and said, hey, what about this? And then at some point it occurred to me that I'm probably not allowed to do that. That's probably going to get me arrested. But there are some really like pretty obvious workarounds. And I think, I mean, we've seen this, right? The commerce has been playing whack-a-mole with Chinese shell entities. And I know we were talking about that way back in October of 22. There are a lot of people in China who are really good at setting up shell companies for just normal things, just normal yeah. operations of regular companies. And that sort of seems to have supercharged. They've upskilled that pretty significantly. And they're just going to keep doing that. Yeah. So, I know I've heard people from the administration or close to it, some of them on your show and elsewhere, talk about, like, I think at some level they understand that none of these rules are permanent. It's just they can't stop China's advance in semiconductors. They're just trying to slow it down. And I think if that's the metric, then that this will probably work. But it won't stop it. I mean, just the amount of effort they're throwing at it, the amount of resources they're throwing at it, just the necessity being the mother of invention, it's going to be very, very challenging. I think there are a lot of smart people spending a lot of time and money in China looking for ways to get around this. And it's not just SMIC and Huawei, because I think that path is still pretty constrained. But I think there are lots of other things, especially around some of these models, and the model stuff is unstoppable. Yeah.
Well, on that point, though, like I wonder, so like a lot of people have come out and said, are we really slowing them down, right? When DeepSec looked pretty good and they're pointing to a whole host of other innovations that it's forcing them to get better. And I've seen a number of VCs kind of come out and say the same thing, right? Saying, look, by nature of doing this, the unintended consequence, right, as we talk about, is that they're going to get really good. They're going to figure this out. They're going to get really good at it. I guess what I don't know is how much of those examples they have with, DeepSec and others is getting access to GPUs, like, Jay said, either through the public cloud, or are they doing that on restricted, somewhat limited capabilities? I don't know the answer to that. But my point is that people are, constantly pointing out the challenge, and that by doing this, you're really actually going to force them to really actually generate their own proprietary solutions here. And that's kind of counter to the goal.
This is my big question, right? Is like, I don't believe that you can keep model weights safe. I don't believe you can keep algorithmic innovation secret.
Sure. No way.
But what you can do is, and what I think the US government has demonstrated over the past few years, is you can stop the sort of like, you can stop like scale amounts of Blackwell getting into China, and you can stop domestic Chinese manufacturing of chips below 7 nanometer. So the really interesting thing is, and I think it's when you're thinking about the export controls, there's like a stock versus flow thing where it started in 2022, but didn't really start until 2023. And there are parts of it that didn't even start until December of 2024. So what I think is going to be remarkable, and like listeners of your podcast understand, but a lot of Washington doesn't, and a lot of the VCs I think don't either, is that like we are at this crazy exponential inflection point of the amount of compute that is about to come online for all of these Western hyperscalers. And the fact of the matter is, like, there is no equivalent, and smuggling here and there and like making like 10,000 like Ascend 910Bs a year is very different from the entire world working in unison to like make sure that Nvidia can stay on this scaling curve. So My hypothesis, which I'd love for you guys to sort of tease out, is that in fact, like, the real gap is not going to be on the model capabilities, but the ability to sort of like scale and diffuse it out into the broader economy. And, you know, if and whether or not China will be able to scale not just the sort of like the logic node, but all of the other stuff that like Marvell and whatnot are bringing to the table that's allowing something like Blackwell and Rubin to even exist in the first place.
I mean, I think it's partly a technical concern, but there's a very strong economic element to this, which is where I get a little concerned, because unquestionably we're going to the U.S. government's going to constrain Blackwell cells. And it's going to be very hard for them to build up these super efficient, very big, you know, Blackwell data centers, NVIDIA-based data centers. But at the same time, like, they could just go out and build even bigger Ascend 910B data centers that do the same thing, right? It is economically horrible. You'd have to make it, four times the size, eight times the size. But I mean, they just like they just dammed the Brahmaputra. They're going to dam the Brahmaputra River, right? So they have all the power they need if they choose to go down that. But like, I think the economic side, if they really set their mind to it, if we're really talking about AGI, which I think is sort of a subtext here for a lot of these governments, if we're really talking about AGI, sort of an existential threat to everything, then why wouldn't they throw it at? Like, they could achieve it. It'll be orders of magnitude more expensive and, you know, damaging to the economy and their environment, but if they wanted to, and if we're really that important, they could get it done. Just using lots more really cheap, inefficient chips.
Yes, but it's also like, okay, like, then how many more AGIs is the West gonna get, right? Because, like, you know, if we're really talking about the importance of inference in all of this, right? Which I think is like a reasonable thing to bet on, that like, it's better to have 10 agents running around than one agent running around. It's better to have, like, you know, 10 tutors than one, like, you know, 10 like AI R&D engineers, like, you know, than one. Like, even if you go down the route, like, you're trying to set the terms of the competition, right? And if the US government has enabled, like, if there is like enough, I don't know. If that's the world we live in, I think you know, the G20 will be happy that they're able to play that hand out.
Sure. I mean, I think the other dynamic is, you know, to your point about where we're at right now, just in terms of scaling this capacity, being capacity constrained at every level, is, you know, you've got your current supply chain of data center, everybody that we're talking about, right? Of the Marvells, the Broadcoms, even TSMC, NVIDIA, etc., is already struggling to meet demand just from the United States hyperscalers.
Yep.
Like, I don't even think they could start initiating AI factories if China even had access to it. So by nature of, they're going to have to solve this problem in other ways. I think it's just a matter of how far down the stack from N1, N2, N3, or N4 do you need to get that they have access to? But to your other point, right, that becomes an inference question. And if you look at, like, what are these AI, you know, ASIC startups are doing, like, they're doing largely more inference ASIC type stuff, but they're doing it on real late nodes. Like, it's not on 7-nanometer or 5-nanometer yet. So there's even ways they could have access to some of that scale technology, but you're right. I don't think it's ever going to be as fast, as efficient, as agentic. And especially, like, I think, you know, you'd heard sort of what we talked about last week, where what I still think just blows my mind to this. And even if Chiana could figure out the FM side of this and have a foundational, you know, model, and that is the fact that this entire agent factory stack sits as a layer on top of your existing software stack. Like, that's a completely different compute paradigm that, like, we have to churn through that. Like, I don't even know how, I don't think China's going to figure that part out on their own at all, let alone, like, fine, train a model. I don't know how you're going to build these factories to sit as a as a scale level above all the rest of your software and be its agent, right? That's a whole different problem.
Well, no, let me play devil's advocate, because I think there's two sides to that. One is the hardware side, and one's the software side. On the hardware side, I think China has demonstrated a couple times now that there are companies there that are capable of making surprising advances. And the one that's on my mind a lot lately is Chongqing Memory, CXMT, which just 2 weeks ago announced that they had 80% yield on DRAM, DDR5. And I don't think anybody expected them to get there, let alone this quickly. And there's still a lot of controversy about whether or not they're really there, but it looks like they jumped. They made a massive jump and got to DDR5. They don't have HBM yet, and these rules will make it harder for them to do that. But if you had asked me like 2 years ago if they could ever get to DDR5, I would have. I think I actually said it. I didn't think they were going to be able to make it, and yet here they are, yielding pretty well. So I think that they can get closer than we think on the compute side, on the hardware side.
Yeah.
And on the software side, I don't think anyone knows. I think, right, I'm of the mind that AI software is moving so rapidly, and we don't know. Like, there could be somebody who invents a better model than a transformer. I'm going to go further and say somebody will invent a model that's better than a transformer, and maybe that's not going to be as GPU dependent.
Right.
Right. And there's even odds that the person who comes up with that is in China right now.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter if that person is in China, like, because that sort of idea will end up diffusing. Like, Jay, like, I think those are all, like, CXMT is an interesting one, because that was, like, very, like, the U.S. government was very focused on that, and that was one of the things that they tried to whack. And they screwed up. They didn't do it for whatever reason in December, and then they had a little addendum a few days ago to make sure that CXMT wasn't going to be able to buy all the tools that they are clearly using in doing in doing their latest like high yield runs. But you know, to the point of like, is there going to be a new technological paradigm that is radically more compute efficient than you know, what we're looking out if we just like draw the trend lines today? Like, yeah, totally possible, and that could totally change the terms of competition for you know, for the US and China domestically, as well as like competing abroad. Because I think that's another really interesting dynamic of this is, like, you know, when you were looking at Huawei versus Nokia and Ericsson, like, Huawei was able to bring you know, a cheaper and better product to the world that the West just couldn't compete with. And at least for now, you know, what you can get from Anthropic, from Llama, from OpenAI built on a Western hyperscaler is like a qualitatively better, is like a, you know, orders of magnitude better than what China could deliver. And by the way, they don't even have enough, you know, Huawei Ascends domestically to even think about serving foreign markets. So, again, if compute changes, if there's some incredible innovation, if, like, you know, China like has some crazy like innovation, maybe not even on an algorithmic level, but like, say they figure out interconnects like twice as well, or like a Marvell competitor or something comes up, like there are definitely like futures which you could imagine for the Chinese folks, for the Chinese offering to become more competitive in the West, but it seems more likely than not that the export controls, plus just like the fact that, you know, there is much more R&D dollars and more engineers happening outside of China to help build, you know, the next Blackwell and the next, you know, data center improvement than what's happening in China, that it seems reasonable for me to bet on the Western offering over the next 5 years or so.
Yeah, I'd say that's true. Also, because let's say that they do, you know, pull this off in some form of a more proprietary software to proprietary Chinese hardware model, right? That's not that, then you would have to adopt that same infrastructure elsewhere, and it's unlikely from a compatibility standpoint you'd want to do that when you, as a Western, you know, country has invested in other architectures that's probably better. So because it just wouldn't run the same, on the NVIDIA stuff or on. So I think that makes it a lot harder. But I think the point we've all sort of landed on, if I'm right, is like the software side of this is harder to control than the hardware side of this when it comes to China.
Yeah.
What's also interesting on the sort of like compute stack side of things is like if you count up all the Chinese models, like 97% of them were trained on CUDA versus Huawei Mindspore. Right. So it's just like even that ecosystem, given all the incentives that they have, is still prefers to use CUDA than the domestic homegrown stuff.
Yeah, that's fair. That's a fair point. So any thoughts on what the unintended consequences of these rules could be?
I mean, you know, so I think this is like probably a good time to talk about all the corporate pushback that you saw.
Yeah.
What I thought was really funny was the tone of these press releases was way different because we're now in the Trump era. So like there's sort of broadly the corporate communication just tenor, I think, tends to like match whoever's in the White House. So for the Obama and Biden years, you know, it was much more like copacetic and like academic or respectful, let's say. And then in Trump won, I think a lot of the corporations were still kind of like weirded out by Trump even being a thing and didn't want to like totally go all in on it. But now when you see Mark Zuckerberg putting Joe Rogan on his board and putting Dana White on his board and whatnot, there seems to be a new aperture for like obnoxious press releases, I guess. So the big loser in the vision of AI, of the sort of AI diffusion control, I think is NVIDIA, because they had this whole idea of sovereign AI, right? Where like Brunei, Thailand, Nepal, Kazakhstan, UAE, like you guys should, like their pitch was like, you should build your own cloud. And like, it should not be AWS or Azure being the sort of like layer over which like the data center should live in their country.
Yep.
And right now, if this rule holds up, there's going to be a kind of like a ceiling on which all of these, you know, very moneyed countries can import. I think it's like 7% of global capacity can go to any one country or Saudi or the UAE or whatever. And then there has to be some sort of approval process. Whereas before, as long as it wasn't within that list of like 30 countries that are banned from importing NVIDIA's best chips, you know, it was open seas and you could do whatever you want.
But I think that's a good point, right? That from their standpoint, right, they had built out this like every country's going to build a sovereign AI factory to go and do these things. And now having those far, you know, those restrictions on how far they can go in their mind, right, limits the true, you know, upside of that. The other part of this that I'm going to completely just speculate into the future about is interesting is think about NVIDIA's positioning also on robotics now and the technologies that they have enabling robotics. Like, are we going to imagine that because this company is at the foundation of, you know, these world models that countries aren't going to be able to build humanoid robots as well? We don't want that. The United States doesn't want them to because for war or whatever, right? It's just weird to think about now controlling this fundamental piece of technology at every level.
Well, here's my question for both of you guys. Like, how much like upside from AI will Mexico lose because it has to use US data centers in sort of spinning up its AI models? Because that's basically the control is not on access to sort of cloud or API. It's just physically where the data centers are
exactly
located. So like, I don't know. I guess there's like a little bit of ping, like, you know, 75 milliseconds really going to like shave off. Is it like if the economic justification is there for your country to like get compute, either, you know, you go through this sort of like trusted cloud provider and you just have AWS build it in your country, which, like, yeah, I mean, it's kind of annoying for NVIDIA because there are fewer neo clouds, so it's harder to, like, they lose a little bit of pricing power. But, like, you're, if the economic value is still there, like, countries are still going to want to have access to the compute. It'll just be owned by one of these trusted clouds or, like, next door in the sort of, like, nearest country that has that's on the green list.
Well, but in terms of, in this case, right, you have Mexico, and let's just say Canada would if it never came down to that, but Mexico, right, are close proximity enough that it may not matter. But at the same time, you've got to have those localized data centers' ability to take on a nation, right, at this point, which is capacity that I don't even know where you get, right? The bigger question is, what's Asia do? What does Europe do, right? How does that get worked out for any countries, right, in the Middle East, right, that you're trying to moderate? So I think for us, right, and the whole reason you've always had localized data centers is just to meet local capacity. I don't know how easy that would be to say, sure, you know, we can actually have enough capacity for an entirely other nation.
So basically the rule says you can build all the data set, like you can get approval to build really big data centers, but they have to be run by trusted cloud providers. So they can't be these sort of neo clouds that you're going to sell, bleeding edge compute to. We don't, you know, like the US government doesn't trust them enough not to be shell companies for, Chinese firms or the Chinese government.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
NVIDIA will still be able to build, tens of billions of dollars of compute in the Middle East and Singapore and what have you. There just needs to be an American hyperscaler that is in charge of the build. So I don't know.
Well, that's why I also wonder, like, could it evolve to not just an American hyperscaler, but like, what role does the nation play, right, in moderating that? Like, does Europe then say, well, we'll provide infrastructure and regulate that perhaps more if they do, you know, their own sovereign AI like type of a play.
Yeah, I don't know. It's possible. It was interesting because, like, not everyone in the EU got approval. Like
sure.
Austria wasn't on there. Switzerland wasn't on there. Poland wasn't on there. Like, there were only a handful of countries. Like, it was like Ireland and the UK and Norway and I think a few others. There are some big markets that, like, didn't get the love, but I don't know.
This is Trump's reason that he apparently wants to take over Greenland, I guess. We're going to build data centers there. It's going to be Greenland powered by, you know, the United States data centers because it's freezing there. It's cold there, so you might as well put it on a very hot data center. Greenland's going to be the data center for the world. That's why Trump wants it, apparently. Poor beautiful Greenlanders, man.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's just the thing with Trump is he likes cutting deals, right? Like, this whole AI diffusion rule, it's just like a whole new dimension on which you can cut deals, right?
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, it's just more... It's like, totally. We have the leverage, like, we make the best technology, and I understand why you would want to have this strategic resource be mostly based in the U.S., and, you know... Yeah,
agreed.
If this is the future of the world and the analogy, then the analogy at some level is like, which countries are you willing to sell F-35s to and which countries aren't? And which countries do you trust that they're going to do the right thing, not the wrong thing with the F-35s you sell to them? So, you know, we'll see. AI's not there yet, but like it might be, and it might be sooner than we're all ready for it. And totally. You might as well sort of like lay out this type of framework. If this really turns into, if the analogy to something like an F-35 or an Abrams tank becomes a lot less strained than it currently looks like, you know, when you're just playing with Claude today.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
I don't know. I buy all that. I just, what I've been thinking through lately though today is, what does it mean for us? Like, what's it going to change? It's obviously NVIDIA gets hurt. But then, what really keyed me off was it Greg Allen from CSIS? Was talking about the detailed rules about if you want to manufacture a chip at TSMC, you now need to get, TSMC now needs to audit, has to basically do KYC and gets to, like, the government, the U.S. government is going to want to, like, know who all their customers are. I think that is a little scary from someone coming from startup land. You now have to go through a layer of regulation. And you guys made the point that like anyone doing advanced nodes at TSMC is probably well funded. But I've been on the other side of that, and like no startup is ever funded enough. And like how bad does that process get? That scares me a little. I think there are other things in here like that that we haven't thought, nobody has thought through yet, because it's right. And then I also think it's going to create all kinds of incentives on the other side. Like, what was it? There's a rule, something about geolocation of some of the models. Some of the NVIDIA equipment will now have to like get geolocated, and right, using DNS records, right? And that what that tells me is now, what is it, unit 61398 in Shanghai, the cyber espionage unit, now has a new mission. They're now going to subvert the entire global DNS system. Or they probably already have it. So like there are all kinds of weird little things like that are going to start popping up.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, there's trade-offs with all of this, and there's, how far can you squeeze NVIDIA earnings while still have NVIDIA being the global world beater and creating, you know, AI for data centers? Like, you can probably squeeze them a little bit more, and I think they'll be okay. Like, how far are you willing, you know, how far can you squeeze, like, the next Cerebras or whatever? Probably less than you can squeeze NVIDIA. But, like, you know, how bad is it that Huawei was basically able to fab as much as they wanted on at TSMC for 2 years? Like, pretty bad.
Exactly.
Right? So you know, there's a give and take with all of this. And I think my hope with the sort of foundry registration stuff is, like, once you prove, like, it seems like a relatively, like, if you're not a Chinese-based company, like, it seems like a relatively straightforward thing to verify that you are not a Huawei shell firm. And once, you only have to do the registration process once, and then you're on a whitelist, and then, like, everything is fine. So, look, like, it could suck, but I think there is an awareness that, well, whatever, you know, it's going to be up to Trump. Like, we'll just have to see.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for the time, Jordan. I think you'll be our go-to come back to as we, I'm sure, see more chaos this year once or twice on these restrictions. So we appreciate your time. Maybe just give our listeners, like, how do they track you, find you, your podcast, your writing, et cetera. Let them know where to find you.
China Talk, one word on any podcast app, chinatalk.media for the newsletter. And I just want to say thanks for you guys. Like, if it wasn't for Jay's blog and this podcast, I would have known so much less about semiconductors than I do today. You know, you guys helped get me into this in the first place. And I just want to say thanks so much for all of the, all that I've learned from you about this, like, magical industry over the past, 10 plus years. I've been reading Digits and Dollars for a long time. Good. So you guys are great. You're the OGs. This is amazing.
Well, we appreciate that.
You're too kind. It's good to have you on. It's good to have you
on. Likewise. Yeah. Okay. Cool. All right. Until next time. Appreciate it, Jordan.
Bye, guys.